This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks. My name is Rob St. George. Today, we're going to focus on the world's insatiable thirst for clean water. Various factors make this an immense challenge. These factors include everything from demographics to climate change. However, I'm joined today by Anand Venkatramanan, Head of ETF Investment Strategies at LGIM, to hear about some of the innovative solutions being developed to meet this need and, of course, the investment opportunities created by those solutions. First of all, thank you for joining us, Anand.
Thanks, Rob.
Now, if I can ask you quite simply, are the various concerns people have about pollution and water wars scaremongering, or is there a serious threat behind all those headlines?
Well, let's look at some of the current statistics and hard facts, and I'll let you conclude based on that. Water use is growing at twice the pace of population growth, and water scarcity already affects 4 out of 10 people. Only 2.5% of total water on Earth is fresh water, and that might not be surprising given the fact that 70% of the planet's surface is made up of oceans, and that just pretty much contains salt water. But the interesting thing here is that only 10 countries actually control 60% of the available freshwater reserves on this planet. And on the other hand, when you look at countries that are densely populated, let's take China and India, for example, just under 40% of the global population lives in these two countries, but they have access to only about 8% of the global freshwater reserves. And that makes the distribution and the availability of freshwater reserves quite disparate, because on one hand, you have sparsely populated countries, let's say someone like Norway, who have a lot of freshwater reserves, and Russia accounts for a significant chunk of freshwater reserves. And on the other hand, we have densely populated countries that have access to very limited supply of water. So in fact, per capita water supply has fallen 56% since 1962, with 57% of aquifers having passed the tipping point. And that's because of the fact that 50% of population and 43% of irrigation is actually supplied by groundwater.
Okay, so it sounds like the world is facing a rather worrying degree of water scarcity. As you mentioned India and China, I wondered to what extent changing demographics around the world are aggravating this problem.
A lot, actually. You can categorize that into three factors. One would be population growth, urbanization, and industrialization. So by 2025, 1.8 billion people are expected to be living in countries or regions with absolute water scarcity, and two-thirds of the world population could be under water stress conditions. And also by 2030, according to World Bank, food production will need to increase by 50%. And as you may know, agriculture already accounts for an average of 70% of total water consumption. And in order to meet those increasing demands, it is indeed going to be a challenge.
Okay, so you've just mentioned agriculture there too. Without wishing to make this conversation too depressing, I suppose we should bring in climate change. Climate change is obviously having an impact on food production around the world. How does that affect demand for and supply of water?
That's actually an easier question to answer, because we're seeing the effects of climate change already in the world today. We're seeing more stronger storms and hurricanes. We're seeing floods and droughts in different parts of the world. And that's only going to get worse, I presume. For every degree Celsius of increase in the temperature across the globe, we're going to see more water vapor in the atmosphere, and that's going to lead to more stronger hurricanes, as we've been seeing in the recent past. And that's only going to cause more floods in certain parts of the world, but that could also lead to droughts and a non-availability of water in other parts of the world. And if you look at how climate change is going to change the demographics of the future global population, water scarcity in some arid and semi-arid places will displace between 24 million and 700 million people. And to add to that, you know, today, agriculture is one of the largest consumers of water, and that's expected to grow by about 50% by 2030, even under a very modest assumption of just 2% growth in demand over the next 10 to 15 years. And the interesting fact is the industrial consumption of water is expected to double over the next 10 years. And again, there's going to be an increasing challenge to meet those demands as well. And if you put all of those together, we expect the world to face at least a 40% deficit between the availability of fresh water and the demand that we will face in the next 10 years.
So water scarcity is a fairly terrifying problem. But it seems to me that where we do have abundant water, it is increasingly becoming polluted too. How is that complicating these questions?
Pollution is further complicating the challenges we are facing today in the clean water industry. Nearly 70% of industrial waste is dumped into water across the globe. 8 million metric tons of plastic is dumped into the ocean per annum. And when you just look at the UK, microplastics were found in every river that was tested. And in addition to, say, plastic or waste pollution in our water bodies, there's an increasing concern over the growth of pharma pollution as well. There's growing evidence that suggests that there are antibiotics present in the freshwater reserves that we have in certain parts of the world, and that could actually be a cause of huge concern over the next 10 to 15 years.
So that is a substantially daunting set of challenges facing the world in bringing clean water to all those who need it. But of course, we aren't the only ones in the world who are aware of this issue. Ensuring the availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all is in fact one of the UN's sustainable development goals. What kind of targets is the UN setting for meeting that goal by 2030?
That's a very good question, quite topical for this theme, actually. So by 2030, the Sustainable Development Goals target would include universal and equitable access to water and sanitation, better water quality and water use efficiency, integrated water resources management, and expanded international cooperation and capacity building. And of course, you know, they'll be looking at promoting water harvesting, desalination treatments, recycling and reuse technologies, and strengthen the participation of local communities in improving water and sanitation management as well. So solving water scarcity is still within our reach. Around 2.6 billion people have already gained access to improved drinking water since 1990, according to WHO and UNICEF. And we certainly can continue that trend into 2030s to meet the UN SDG targets. Another $735 billion could provide universal access to basic water and adequate sanitation by 2030.
So on the one hand, those do seem within reach. But equally, according to the latest UN report on this issue, 785 million people still lack even a basic drinking water service. What kind of priorities should we be focusing on to help those 785 million people?
I see three key areas. The first is in water treatment, the second in water management, and the third would be water infrastructure and supply. Clearly, utilities form the backbone of water industry, and they cater to the needs of their clients by producing water, by conserving water, by supplying, distributing, and recycling and reusing the water as well. But in order to make their task more efficient, we see the water management, water treatment to play a very key role over the next 20 to 30 years. And that, I feel, would be the, you know, the priority areas for taking us closer to meeting the SDG targets.
And what kind of level of investment will be required to meet those targets you mentioned earlier? Are you able to quantify the size of this market opportunity?
I would want to split the market opportunity into two parts. One would include the utility providers and infrastructure providers, and the other would include technology and digital solution providers. And when you just look at the utilities and infrastructure landscape, McKinsey and New Climate Economy expect anywhere between $7.5 trillion to $23 trillion to be spent over the next 10 to 20 years to meet the SDG targets. And on the technology and digital solutions front, a research published by Frost and Sullivan indicates that in 2016, nearly half of the global investment went into technology and digital solution providers. And that's a sum of about $300 billion spent into that category just within a year.
So when you're talking about sums of money that run into potentially trillions of dollars, that is perhaps too much for governments to invest on their own. But of course, providing clean water isn't just a public policy goal. It's also a business imperative for many too. So why are businesses too contributing the money to solving these kinds of challenges?
Well, that's because water is consumed across all different industries. And when you look at the total global water consumption, different research providers peg that number at about 13 billion cubic meters per year. And of that, nearly 34% is consumed by just the power industry. And with the recent developments in the shale industry as well, when you look at shale gas, water is one of the key tools that's used to frack the rocks underneath and extract the gas that's trapped in these rocks. And on top of that, mining industry consumes a lot of water, pulp and paper, chemicals, food and beverage, and the list keeps going on. But the key fact here is that water is a key tool, be it textiles, be it power, be it mining, be it food and beverage. It is a key tool used in each of these industries, and there is every incentive for them to invest money into the sector over the next few years.
Okay, so we have, on the one hand, vast problems facing the world's demand for clean water, and on the other hand, potentially vast sums of money being devoted to solving those challenges. How much of the burden for meeting these challenges will fall onto traditional utilities?
Certainly, yes. Investment into technologies and digital solutions are definitely key, as I just mentioned a short while ago. But a bulk of that money is certainly going to be spent within the utilities and infrastructure industry. Clearly, the pipes are all aging in different parts of the world. And in some parts of the world, there's hardly any pipes connecting the reservoirs and homes and industries. So there needs to be a lot of investment building up the infrastructure to distribute and supply water. But on top of that, water industry is very interesting because when you look at utility companies, one way for the utility providers to increase their revenues would be for their consumers, be it residential or commercial, to increase their demand. But that cannot go on because our needs have more or less capped in terms of the amount of water we use on a daily basis at our homes. So the other way for them to look at increasing their revenues would be to minimize leakage, to improve the quality of water, particularly given the fact that pollution is becoming an increasing problem in many parts of the world, and also to invest into technologies that could help them produce water at a much cheaper cost. So when you look at that front, that's where technology and digital solution providers come in, because they're going to be key in enabling utility companies to make their processes and supply more efficient.
Okay, so thinking about types of tech which might solve these problems, one that springs to mind is desalination. Where are we with that process of turning salt water into fresh water? Is there much hope for that to meet these kinds of challenges?
So let's look at desalination. When you look at the whole Middle Eastern belt, the amount of fresh water available is very minimal. And increasingly, countries over there have been investing a lot into desalination to convert salt water into fresh water. There are different ways of desalinating water, and some of those have actually become more mature, but they're not necessarily the most efficient way to desalinate water. And there is a variety of technologies that's being worked upon right now to reduce the power consumption and to increase the output and quality of the clean water that's produced. And when you look at the smart water technology market as such, and that's expected to grow at about 19% on an annual basis and has the potential to save nearly $7 to $12 billion annually. And adding to that, there's going to be substantial investment going into smart water distribution networks, smart leakage management, and smart water quality management as well. And that would cover providers of systems, components, data management, SCADA systems, water treatment plants, and variety of other equipments. In fact, United Nations expect for every dollar spent on water and sewage infrastructure, that could actually have a multiplier effect of up to $9.
Right. So I think most people will probably have heard of desalination already. But what kinds of new exciting technology are being developed to help the world meet these challenges?
There's plenty going on, to be honest, in this industry. You know, I'm sure people would have heard about graphenes and how they could be used to filter water. But apart from that, you know, we've got developments in carbon nanotubes. And another interesting area would be what we call as biomimetic membranes. And this technology was commercialized by a company called Aquaporin. And what they do there is to use aquaporin proteins to imitate the mechanism by which water is transported across biological cell membranes. That's quite an interesting area because we are borrowing something from biology and putting that into use in the clean water industry. And to touch upon desalination that we just covered, within desalination itself, there are different types of achieving that. So there's reverse osmosis, there's forward osmosis, and various types of deionization and capacitive deionization, humidification, dehumidification, all kind of different technologies that are currently being researched upon. And some of them have clearly reached a far more mature stage that's allowing them to be commercialized successfully.
Okay, so that is the exciting end of the technology spectrum. But more prosaically, how are utility companies dealing with the broader and more foundational problem of leakages throughout their networks today?
Well, that's where the digital solution providers come in, because they are enabling smart water distribution networks, smart leakage management, and smart water quality management. And when you look at the digital solutions ecosystem per se, you're talking about companies who provide flow meters, pressure sensors, quality sensors, and valve controls and things like that. So to give you an example, we consume water early in the morning when we get ready to go to work. And the demand for water is going to be really low at night and during midday when most of us are going to be at work. So, and the simple question to ask there is going to be whether utility providers would want to maintain the same pressures in the pipes during off-peak hours as they would do during peak hours. And clearly, reducing the pressure during off-peak hours is going to extend the life of the pipes that are laid underground and that transport the water from reservoirs to our homes. And on top of that, you know, the area of digital solution is going to be very key there in terms of managing the supply-demand characteristics of the water landscape, and at the same time for monitoring the quality of water and the flow of water through the distribution networks.
Okay, so to bring those two sides together, we have on the one hand large utilities, and on the other side we have companies providing the underlying technology to help us solve these water challenges. How is that market evolving? How are the two types of companies interacting?
Well, before I answer that question, I just want to clarify that when you say tech companies, they don't refer to your traditional information technology companies. We've clearly seen a lot of M&A activity and a lot of, you know, investment going into that area. But in this instance, when we talk about clean water, what we are referring to is actually materials technology and water technology companies, the likes of, say, desalination, membrane technology, digital solution providers, data management, meters and flow sensors and things like that. So that's basically the ecosystem that we're talking about. And when you look at the total investment that's gone in over the last few years, it's clearly a staggering number. And we referred to that earlier on, just in 2016, a total of about just over $620 billion went into the water industry, of which 50% went into technology and digital solution providers, and the remaining went into the utility providers and infrastructure developers. But when you look at the M&A scene, the number of transactions globally reached 350 in 2018, and compare that against where we were in 2008, with just over 150 M&A transactions. And the size or the transaction value of all the M&A activity that's happened globally has exceeded over 30 or 40 billion in certain years. And clearly, this trend is set to continue over the coming years based on the data provided by Global Water Intelligence. And another area for increased investment is going to come from the PPP model, i.e. the public-private partnership model. And again, Global Water Intelligence expects the PPP financing to triple by 2020. And that's going to be a key contributor to support the growth of private companies in this space and also to meet the SDG targets by 2030.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Anand. I must say I began this conversation swimming in a fair amount of despair, hearing about the scale of the challenges we face in delivering clean water to everybody in the world. But it sounds like there is indeed a wave of money and investment flowing towards solving these problems and a really exciting pipeline of innovative technology that will help us overcome all these challenges. So again, Anand, thank you for your time and sharing your insights.
Thank you very much, Rob.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.